Chapter 14. Children, we are thinking of a plan of living which will, I hope, be more convenient than this is, but we have not yet decided what to do. At this minute a carriage and pair of horses became visible through one of the angular windows of the apse, in the act of turning in from the highway towards the park gate. The boy who answered to the name of Joey sprang up from the table with the promptness of a jack-in-the-box, and ran out at the door. Everybody turned as the carriage passed through the gate, which Joey held open, putting his other hand, where the brim of his hat would have been if he had worn one, and lapsing into a careless boy again the instant that the vehicle had gone by. There's a tremendous large dinner party at the house tonight, said Emmeline methodically, looking at the equipage over the edge of her teacup, without leaving off sipping. That was Lord Mountclere. He's a wicked old man, they say. Lord Mountclere? Said Ethelberta musingly. I used to know some friends of his. In what way is he wicked? I don't know, said Emmeline, with simplicity. I suppose it is because he breaks the commandments. But I wonder how a big rich lord can want to steal anything. Emmeline's thoughts of breaking commandments instinctively fell upon the eighth, as being in her ideas the only case wherein the gain could be considered, as at all worth the hazard. Ethelberta said nothing, but Christopher thought that a shade of depression passed over her. Hook back the gate, Joey, shouted Emmeline, when the carriage had proceeded up the drive. There's more to come. Joey did as ordered, and by the time he got indoors another carriage turned in from the public road, a one-horse brougham this time. I know who that is. That's Mr. Ladywell, said Emmeline, in the same matter-of-fact tone. He's been here afore. He's a distant relation of the squire's, and he once gave me sixpence for picking up his gloves. What shall I live to see? Murmured the poetess, under her breath, nearly dropping her teacup in an involuntary trepidation, from which she made it a point of dignity to recover in a moment. Christopher's eyes, at that exhibition from Ethelberta, entered her own like a pair of lances. Piketty, seeing Christopher's quick look of jealousy, became involved in her turn, and grew pale as a lily in her endeavors to conceal the complications to which it gave birth in her poor little breast likewise. You judge me very wrongly, said Ethelberta, in answer to Christopher's hasty look of resentment. In supposing Mr. Ladywell to be a great friend of yours? Said Christopher, who had in some indescribable way suddenly assumed a right to Ethelberta as his old property. Yes. For I hardly know him, and certainly do not value him. After this there was something in the mutual look of the two, though their words had been private, which did not tend to remove the anguish of fragile Piketty. Christopher, assured that Ethelberta's embarrassment had been caused by nothing more than the sense of her odd social subsidence, recovered more bliss than he had lost, and regarded calmly the profile of young Ladywell between the two windows of his brougham as it passed the open cottage door, bearing him along unconscious as the dead of the nearness of his beloved one, and of the sad buffoonery that fate, fortune, and the guardian angels had been playing with Ethelberta of late. He recognized the face as that of the young man whom he had encountered when watching Ethelberta's window from Rookington Park. Perhaps you remember seeing him at the Christmas dance at Windway? She inquired. He is a good-natured fellow. Afterwards he sent me that portfolio of sketches you see in the corner. He might possibly do something in the world as a painter, if he were obliged to work at the art for his bread, which he is not. She added with bitter pleasantry. And bear mercy to his self-respect, I must remain unseen here. ..." It impressed Christopher to perceive how, under the estrangement which arose from differences of education, surroundings, experience, and talent, the sympathies of close relationship were perceptible in Ethelberta's bearing towards her brothers and sisters. At a remark upon some simple pleasure wherein he had not participated, because absent and occupied by far more comprehensive interests, a gloom as of banishment would cross her face, and dim it for a while, showing that the free habits and enthusiasms of country life had still their charm with her, in the face of the subtler gratifications of abridged bodices, candlelight, and no feelings in particular, which prevailed in town. Perhaps the one condition which could work up into a permanent feeling the passing revival of his fancy for a woman whose chief attribute he had supposed to be sprightliness was added now by the romantic ubiquity of station that attached to her. A discovery which might have grated on the senses of a man wedded to conventionality, was a positive pleasure to one whose faith in society had departed with his own social ruin. The room began to darken, whereupon Christopher arose to leave, and the brothers Sol and Dan offered to accompany him. 14. A turnpike road, we be thinking of coming to London ourselves soon, said Sol, a carpenter and joiner by trade, as he walked along at Christopher's left hand. There's so much more chance for a man up the country. Now, if you was me, how should you set about getting a job, sir? What can you do? Said Christopher. Well, I am a very good staircase hand, and I have been called neat at sash frames, and I can knock together doors and shutters very well, and I can do a little at the cabinet making. I don't mind framing a roof, neither, if the rest be busy. And I am always ready to fill up my time with planing floorboards by the foot. And I can mix and lay flat tints, said Dan, who was a house painter, and pick out moldings, and grain in every kind of wood you can mention, oak, maple, walnut, satinwood, cherry tree, you can both do too much to stand the least chance of being allowed to do anything in a city, where limitation is all the rule in labor. To have any success, Sol, you must be a man who can thoroughly look at a door, to see what ought to be done to it, but as to looking at a window, that's not your line, or a person who, to the remotest particular, understands turning a screw, but who does not profess any knowledge of how to drive a nail. Dan must know how to paint blue to a marvel, but must be quite in the dark about painting green. If you stick to some such principle of specialty as this, you may get employment in London. Said Dan, striking at a stone in the road with the stout green hazel he carried. A wink is as good as a nod. Thank ye, we'll mind all that now. If we do come, said Sol, we shall not mix up with Mrs. Petherwin at all. Oh no. Perhaps you think it odd that we call her Mrs. Petherwin, but that's by agreement as safer and better than Berta, because we be such rough chaps, you see, and she's so lofty. 'Twould demean her to claim kin why her in London two journeymen like we, that know nothing besides our trades. Not at all, said Christopher, by way of chiming in the friendliest manner. She would be pleased to see any straightforward honest man and brother, I should think, notwithstanding that as he has moved in other society for a time. You don't know Berta. Said Dan, looking as if he did. How in what way do you mean? Said Christopher uneasily. So lofty, so very lofty. Isn't she, Sol? Why, she'll never stir out from mother's till after dark, and then her day begins, and she'll traipse about under the trees, and never go into the high road, so that nobody in the way of gentle people shall run up against her, and know her living in such a little small hut, after biding in a big mansion place. there. We don't find fault with her about it. We like her just the same, though she don't speak to us in the street. For a feller must be a fool to make a piece of work about a woman's pride when 'tis his own sister, and hang upon her, and bother her when he knows 'tis for her good, that he should not. Yes, her life has been queer enough. I hope she enjoys it, but for my part I like plain sailing. None of your ups and downs for me. There, I suppose 'twas her nature to want to look into the world a bit. Father and mother kept Bertha to school, you understand, sir, explained the more thoughtful soul, because she was such a quick child, and they always had a notion of making a governess of her. Sums? If you said to that child, Bertha, leaving pence 3 farthings a day, how much a year, she would tell you in 3 seconds out of her own little head. And that hard sum about the herrings as he had done afore she was 9. True, as he had, said Dan. And we all know that to do that is to do something that's no nonsense. What is the sum? Christopher inquired. What not know the sum about the herrings? Said Dan, spreading his gaze all over Christopher in amazement. Never heard of it, said Christopher. Why, down in these parts, just as you try a man's soul by the 10 commandments, you try his head by that there sum, soul. That we do. A herring and a half for 3 halfpence. How many can he get for leaving pence? That's the feller, and a mortal teaser he is, I assure ye. Our parson, who's not altogether without sense o' weekdays, said one afternoon, if cunning can be found in the multiplication table at all, chickerel, 'tis in connection with that sum. Well, Bertha was so clever in arithmetic, that she was asked to teach summing at Miss Courtley's, and there she got to like foreign tongues more than ciphering, and at last she hated ciphering, and took to books entirely. Mother and we were very proud of her at that time. Not that we be stuck-up people at all, be we, soul? Not at all. Nobody can say that we be that, though there's more of it in the country than there should be by all account. You'd be surprised to see how vain the girls about here be getting. Little rascals, why they won't curtsy to the loftiest lady in the land. No, not if you were to pay 'em to do it. Now, the men be different. Any man will touch his hat for a pint of beer. But then, of course, there's some difference between the two. Touching your hat is a good deal less to do than bending your knees, as Bertha used to say, when she was blowed up for not doing it. She was always one of the independent sort, you never see such a maid as she was. Now, Picotee was quite the other way. Has Picotee left Sandburn entirely? Oh no, she is home for the holidays. Well, Mr. Julian, our road parts from yours just here, unless you walk into the next town along with us. But I suppose you get across to this station, and go by rail? I am obliged to go that way for my portmanteau, said Christopher, or I should have been pleased to walk further. Shall I see you in Sandburn tomorrow? I hope so. Well, no. 'Tis hardly likely that you will see us hardly. We know how unpleasant it is for a high sort of man to have rough chaps like us hailing him, so we think it best not to meet you, thank you all the same. So if you should run up against us in the street, we should be just as well pleased by your taking no notice, if you wouldn't mind. 'Twill save so much awkwardness being in our working clothes. 'Tis always the plan that Mrs. Petherwin and we agree to act upon, and we find it best for both. I hope you take our meaning right, and as no offense, Mr. Julian. And do you do the same with Picotee? Oh Lord, no, 'tisn't a bit of use to try. That's the worst of Picotee, there's no getting rid of her. The more in the rough we be, the more she'll stick to us. And if we say she shan't come, she'll bite and fret about it till we be forced to let her. apostrophe apostrophe, Christopher laughed and promised, on condition that they would retract the statement about their not being proud, and then he wished his friends good night. 15. An inner room at the lodge at this time a discussion of some importance was in progress. The scene was Mrs. Chickerell's bedroom, to which, unfortunately, she was confined by some spinal complaint, and here she now appeared as an interesting woman of 45, properly dressed as far as visible, and propped up in a bed covered with a quilt which presented a field of little squares in many tints, looking altogether like a bird's eye view of a market garden. Mrs. Chickerell had been nurse in a nobleman's family until her marriage, and after that she played the part of wife and mother, upon the whole, affectionately and well. Among her minor differences with her husband, had been one about the naming of the children, a matter that was at last compromised by an agreement under which the choice of the girls' names became her prerogative, and that of the boys her husband's, who limited his field of selection, to strict historical precedent as a set-off to Mrs. Chickerell's tendency to stray into the regions of romance. The only grown-up daughters at home, Ethelberta and Picotte, with their brother Joey, were sitting near her. The two youngest children, Georgina and Myrtle, who had been strutting in and out of the room, and otherwise endeavoring to walk, talk, and speak like the gentleman just gone away, were packed off to bed. Emmeline, of that transitional age which causes its exponent to look wistfully at the sitters when romping, and at the rompers when sitting, uncertain whether her position in the household is that of child or woman, was idling in a corner. The two absent brothers and two absent sisters, eldest members of the family, completed the round 10 whom Mrs. Chickerell with thoughtless readiness had presented to a crowded world, to cost Ethelberta many wakeful hours at night, while she revolved schemes, how they might be decently maintained. I still think, apostrophe Ethelberta was saying, that the plan I first proposed is the best. I am convinced, that it will not do to attempt to keep on the lodge. If we are all together in town, I can look after you much better, than when you are far away from me down here. Apostrophe apostrophe, shall we not interfere with your plans for keeping up your connections? Apostrophe apostrophe, inquired her mother, glancing up towards Ethelberta, by lifting the flesh of her forehead, instead of troubling to raise her face altogether. Not nearly so much, as by staying here. Apostrophe apostrophe, but, apostrophe said Picotte, if you let lodgings, won't the gentlemen and ladies know it? Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.